Mini episode 1777 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1777. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my fellow original dignitary, charter member in the FDH Lounge, Chris Galloway. And if Chris is on, there's a strong chance that we're talking NFL. We've had him on for any other number of things over the years, but he's been our lead NFL guy the last several years, and it is mid-season, so if you're putting two and two together and you're saying, well, Rick and Chris are probably sitting down to do an NFL mid-season analysis, then you would be right. And that is what we're doing. Now, having said that, wherever the podcast is showing up, you're going to see it labeled as the NFL midseason analysis. So you could have gleaned it from that, I suppose, when you clicked on it to listen. But be that as it may, we're breaking down the landscapes in the AFC and the NFC thus far, where we got it right, where we got it wrong, what we're thinking is going to happen the rest of the way. And again, there were some surprises that we saw coming. There were some surprises that we sort of saw coming. There were some that, of course, we didn't see coming. And there were things that we knew all along that proved to be true. And here to sort that out with me, of course, Chris Galloway. Chris, good to have you in, my man.
Rick, always a pleasure to be here with you.
This is
another season update, and what a wacky season it's been.
It has been a wacky season, and in the AFC, this is a thing where, again, there were a lot of people that were picking Kansas City to come out of the AFC and go for the three-peat this year. And again, when we did the, when you go back to Fantasy Football Draftology 2024, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, our one run-on sentence for each NFL team, that formed the basis when you and I were doing the divisional previews prior to the season. And you and I were both on the same page that, like, Kansas City, the rare team that looks better in their third year than they did in their second year, keeping in mind they hadn't lost Rashee Rice yet at that point in time, and that, again, they seemed like they were going to be stronger on paper, which, again, you go back to the teams that have chased three-peats, New England, Dallas, San Francisco, Pittsburgh. It's never the case that you look stronger. The best case scenario is maybe Pittsburgh in 76, where you maybe look as strong, or San Francisco in 90. And of course, it didn't happen either of those years. You and I were not necessarily looking to be contrarians, but both of us were looking here. We thought that Cincinnati was very, very undervalued because nobody was really paying attention to them coming off of that. And again, this is a team that won nine games in the absence of Joe Burrow last year. So you and I were both like, hey, what about the Bengals? And again, as I said to you off air, I think we both underestimated in terms of the start they were going to get off to. This asinine thing that they do of bubble wrapping their guys in training camp. They ended up giving, the situation with Ja'Marr Chase, it was a situation where, you know, that could have been worked out better. Certainly, but again, the way that it's going here, and again, perhaps you and I, as you pointed out off air, didn't exactly anticipate as much that they had lost defensively. But again, it's a situation where everybody that picked the chalk in the AFC, it looks overwhelmingly at this point like they're going to be right because Kansas City is there. But it's one of those situations where it's almost completely by default. I was listening to a live stream the other day on YouTube that was being done. Jaguar Gator 9, one of the best football channels out there, a guy that does a lot of football historical videos. He was doing a breakdown on NFL trade deadline day, which in some quarters in America is known as Election Day. But of course, it's really NFL trade deadline day. I did see some stuff on Twitter about some orange guy, but I didn't really pay that any attention. It was deadline day. And this guy was saying, weakest AFC since 2002, maybe the weakest since 89. And interestingly enough, the Browns made the playoffs both of those years. Actually made the AFC Championship game in 89, the last great run that the Browns team has ever had, arguably. But in looking at it here, again, Kansas City by default in the AFC. There are many stories of the season, but you'd have a harder time finding the most compelling story being that. Kansas City by default with the complete and utter rubble of the AFC sitting beneath them.
Well, they are certainly giving a masterclass on how you build and rebuild on the fly. I guess rebuild might not be the right word.
Retool. Retool.
How you just, retool is the right word. How you just keep swapping out parts and retooling, just keeping that car on the road and it trucking down the road. That organization right now is just, they're on a heater. It doesn't, all the moves they make just seem to all work. So it is something that all these teams should be studying. And sort of following up on what you said about the Bengals, I mean, yeah, we didn't foresee the defensive struggles coming out of the Bengals that have sort of developed this year. And that does happen sometimes with teams. Something goes off precipitously that you just didn't foresee. And so we're seeing that with the Bengals. They're just not that good. In fact, probably if Winston had played, the Browns probably would have beaten the Bengals a couple weeks ago. And so they'd be even in a further hole. So our prediction for the Bengals for the Super Bowl, which we both independently arrived at, certainly doesn't look very good at this time. I mean, we knew the Chiefs would be good, at the Chiefs championship game. But they certainly have become the class, or at least remain the class of the conference. A conference that's struggling, really, Miami's struggles, Miami, New England building. Baltimore, has some defense problems there that you realize now that, they're probably not going to get far enough in the playoffs with the way that defense is playing. And then, something you didn't bring up, but, Ferg, you and I have both been sort of pre-declaring the demise of the Pittsburgh Steelers for quite some time.
Yeah.
And it just never seemed to happen. Anchored by a solid defensive effort, quarterback play is steady, and there they are sitting at 6-2 currently, on top of the AFC North. So, some interesting developments, for sure in the AFC. One that I would draw your attention to, really, there's two teams that I'm really interested in talking about, and that is Denver and the Chargers, both out in the West.
Sure.
All above 500. I thought that the Broncos were going to be a train wreck.
Me too.
This year. I was not a believer in Bo Nix, and I thought that Sean Payton might be exposed. And the fact that sitting there at 5-4 in third place in that division speaks volumes about what's going on in that building. And then the Chargers sitting at 5-3, they are ahead of the – you discussed it in the preseason. I said Harbaugh's going to turn them around in the playoffs. They're going to be competitive. We all know it's coming.
Yep.
He wins everywhere he goes. I just admit that it seems to be happening much quicker than I had anticipated.
I thought they'd make the playoffs. The Denver thing, I'm with you. I still don't really think I'm a believer in Knicks, but I'm certainly more open to that than I was previously. You look at some of the other things in the AFC, and you touched on it with Baltimore. That Baltimore, again, we talked about it, in the preseason here. How's the team going to be in the trenches? Well, offensively, you're seeing that having Derrick Henry there, they're doing good enough on the blocking, clearly, because you've still got Jackson able to run a lot. You've got Henry able to run a lot. Defensively, again, we thought they might fall off a bit, and they have. So it's a thing where Baltimore treading water from where they were a year ago. Buffalo's doing exactly what I thought they would do, which is to be treading water from a year ago. I said they're going to win the AFC East, and I said that even before Tua went down. But I said I still don't think they're a team that can get past Kansas City or any of the other real contenders in the AFC, and that's still how I see them. So Baltimore, Buffalo treading water a year ago. That wasn't enough to get past Kansas City. What makes them anybody think they're going to be able to do it? And before I talk about the real fraud contender of the AFC, I will talk about Pittsburgh here and go back to what you said. I mean, Mike Tomlin, this is one of the rarest things that I've ever heard of, because we talk about people that go down to the Mississippi Delta and sell their soul for this or that or whatever. For Mike Tomlin to have done that for a bum-ass roster that somehow rises up, goes 10-7, and gets eliminated in the first round like the trash that they are every year, Mike Tomlin is selling his soul very cheaply, I would say. Because Pittsburgh looks like they're going to do that yet again, Chris. But what the heck? I mean, he's getting what the devil promised him, another team that can go out in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on their team, but this is a team that I thought was, you know, locked in at like 7 or 8 wins this year, probably nine when I predicted, and missing the playoffs. So they are, I mean, look, that could still happen. You know, your injuries occur, but, you know, especially at the beginning of the season with Justin Fields, it felt like they were kind of getting it done with smoke and mirrors. But somehow they were just getting it done, you know, and yet here we are. So, you know, we say this every year about Mike Tomlin. Every Steelers fan rant and rave of how they want him fired. They're sick of the mediocrity. They're tired of it. And yet here we are. Every year, winning record, competitive team, a good defense. They find a way to win. Yeah, it's never enough, not good enough to get over them. On the playoff, when you get into the really good teams, right? But damn, what Bruins fans wouldn't give to living the life of Steelers fans, right? Consistently successful.
Well, yeah, if you want to call it that, constantly going out in the first round of the playoffs, but sure. It's more than we thought they were going to do this year, which you could say that most years, because I always think this is the year that gravity's going to kick in, and they're going to end up where, you know, the eye test tells you they're going to end up, and they consistently defy the eye test. And again, a lot of that is the ones that hate Tomlin the most, I will say, are the ones I think that are probably the least realistic about the roster that's there. Now, having said that, while he's not the GM, he has a strong voice, as I understand it, in the personnel, so that doesn't absolve him altogether. I think he's part of the reason they don't have a better roster, I think, with his input on it. I think he's as guilty as the folks in the front office for them not having a better, deeper roster. But again, you know, another Pittsburgh 10-7 season that's going to end in tears in January. So I guess right now we should pencil them in for that again in 2025 and not get fooled by what the eye test tells us. But again, the team I promised here to talk about in a second, the fraud team of the AFC. I mean, if you look at their record, you would simply think, oh, well, they're doing what we thought they were going to do, that being Houston. But boy, this is a thing where, and again, I'm going to bring this up here. You can also find this on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com, our 2024 FDH NFL midseason breakdown. And aside from a couple of categories here, just three categories where they are in single-digit rankings, I won't get into all the specifics on what categories we're talking about here, but here's where Houston ranks in a number of different categories. 17, 17, 14, 16, 19, 16, 17. We thought they would be single-digit rankings, probably in most categories here, both sides of the ball. They're hovering right around mediocrity in most of these areas here, Chris. So it's a thing where they're in a division that is also substantially worse than we thought it was going to be. The AFC South, I still think it's the division of the future, but the future is not now. So Houston's going to win this division going away basically by default. But as far as a team that we thought could be a legitimate counterweight to Kansas City in the AFC, you know, if you look at the records, they're not far away. If you look at the reality of it, even though Kansas City has not been as good as their undefeated record, Houston is somehow far more inferior than the record they have.
Now, are you saying that this is this division is the AFC Rio de Janeiro?
Yes.
You know, the division of the future, and it always will be.
I love the reference. I'm not ready to say that yet, but the future is not now. And you and I were thinking that the future was now. But this roster here, I mean, you know, at best, It's one of those things where in 2025, a couple of these teams are going to rise up. But it has been weaker than we thought it was going to be. I think the regression that we've seen of Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville and the whole thing that, like, Doug Peterson, who always starts out very well as a head coach and then things kind of inexplicably fall apart from there, just bit by bit by bit. Tennessee is basically who I think we thought they were going to be this year at this stage of their rebuild. But again, Houston is winning this division by default. And again, in Indianapolis, now they don't know if they got the right quarterback in Richardson. I thought they might have overdrafted him, but I think it's also too soon to pull the plug on him. They're torn between wanting to contend for a spot this year with Joe Flacco, which they saw the Browns do last year, and building with their quarterback for the long term. So it's real uncertainty in Indianapolis what the direction should even be. But again, for Houston, yes. I mean, I know that they've had various issues here, you know, injuries at wide receiver that have really kind of, you know, decimated what was maybe the best depth in the NFL coming into the season. And again, I know Houston's had some issues of health, but that doesn't explain everything. Like, they look like I'm always sort of infuriated by a lot of the smart mark stuff from a lot of the wise guys in football. Like, oh, the plexiglass theory, a team would inevitably, if they've, you know, gained more than this many games this year, it'll always, you know, they're going to regress horribly the next year. Well, again, in terms of their record, they're not on pace to really regress, but they look like a team that has regressed in everything but their record.
Yeah, and I think that's function, like you said, of the division. It's not a very good football team. It's certainly not one that contenders would be afraid to play. I mean, you can't have a game as we had about 2 weeks ago where C.J. Stroud passes for 89 yards in a game.
Yeah.
You know, I said that personally because he was my quarterback in fantasy football, and he's killing me. And now if he ends up with the season, oh, wait, yeah, it was my wide receiver one. So that's how short my fantasy season is going.
Yeah. Not good.
But, yeah, I mean, I think with Diggs and Stroud looking like he's regressing after last year, not uncommon in the sort of sophomore slump. It's, they certainly have some issues there that they are going to have to address in the offseason because they'll make the playoffs and bow out very quickly. They're not going to compete for a Super Bowl, and so they're going to have to look at that roster and see what kind of changes they have to make. You know, I was never an Anthony Richardson guy or a believer. I think that's proven now that was horrifically overdrafting. He had not played much football at the college level. And you see this now. When are they going to learn, you know, with the, you know, guys like him and who was the kid that San Francisco overdrafted?
Trey Lance.
Trey Lance, that's it. Now sitting in Dallas as the third stringer. You know, it's just, you know, it's like, well, this guy looks amazing. And he played 10 minutes of, you know, 1AA football, so we're drafting him third. Like, you know, these sometimes overthink it. Now, I don't believe that C.J. Stroud is really going backwards to that degree.
Right.
But there's some alarm about his game and has the league figured him out, and is he prepared to put in work and do the study and improve? That'll be a big test into next year. But again, they make the plan. It's a lousy division. Jacksonville is an absolute black hole at this point. And again, I have to say, it probably points to Trevor Lawrence being a bust. But I also, there is part of me that wonders if he ends up in sort of a Sam Darnold type situation,
mm-hmm.
where somebody picks off the heap in year 5 or 6 and with coaching, suddenly, hey, look, they play football.
Right.
I wonder if that's where we're heading with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, it's a weird and a bad situation there, the way that has gone. You go to the NFC, and one of the big stories of the season is the fact that there have been two teams in the NFL that are giant surprises vis-a-vis being Super Bowl contenders. One is the team that looks set to win the NFC East at this point. If Philly ever gets their head out of their ass, which they're showing signs of in recent weeks, maybe they'll give them a run for their money. But the Washington Don't Call Us Redskins in first place behind I can't even say superstar, all-world rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels, and the way that he has played and the way that so many other guys on this retooled roster have stepped up. I said to you off air that Washington reminds me of, because I did talk about in the preseason preview that we did here, that Washington had really retooled that roster aggressively in the offseason. I think I picked them for 7 wins. So I was higher on them than most people were, but I still wasn't as high on them as I should have been, much like Houston a year ago. I was closer to where Houston was than anybody else, but I still wasn't really that close because they exceeded everyone's expectations so much. Well, Washington and Minnesota, who I didn't see coming at all, they are the Houstons of this year as far as a breakthrough Super Bowl contender. Minnesota, I was not a believer in the J.J. McCarthy pick that they made, so I didn't think that they lost as much when he went down. By the way, right now, for all that everyone is saying that, like, Darnold will be a free agent in the offseason, and I say this as the original Sam Darnold bitter clinger, Sam Darnold truther like you, Chris, I think that would be asinine. Put J.J. McCarthy on the trade block and re-sign this guy. That's what I would do if I was Minnesota. Why mess with a good thing? They got it going on there. I know Sam Darnold's not going to come as cheap after this year, but, this is giving me Kurt Warner 99 shades of, like, a guy comes off the bench out of nowhere to basically do what he's doing, and you've got these two teams here. And the thing with Minnesota is it's less inexplicable in the sense that you look at the rest of the roster, and it was basically in place. They had so many pieces in place on both sides of the ball. So if somebody would have told you Sam Darnold is finally going to look like the Sam Darnold that you and I have always been saying that he really can be, I don't think we'd be surprised about where they're at because of the shape of the rest of the roster. But this is one of these things where, and I've made the point to you, not to twist the knife or anything like this, but when you look at analytically driven organizations, everything that everybody was hoping that the Cleveland Browns were going to be, that's what Minnesota actually is, and they're proving it this year.
Well, and the irony that GM came to Cleveland.
Yeah.
So what's the problem in Cleveland, right?
Well, ownership, for one.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's that simple, but again, ownership's not building those spreadsheets. Ownership's not doing the combine. Ownership is scouting players. Like,
sure,
there is something really broken in Cleveland, right, that you just can't cover up anymore. Anyway, we're not talking about Cleveland.
Right.
Minnesota, right. I mean, again, we talked about a little bit in the preseason about how Darnold could end up being a revelation for them waiting on McCarthy, and it looked like they were just going to play McCarthy. So I had news for them. They aren't trading McCarthy. They're not trading McCarthy. They came up to get up there and get him. They're going to do the thing where they let Darnold go, and they're going to bring McCarthy, back on the IR next year, and hope to prove everybody right or wrong, or right or wrong, depending on your opinion, on that choice. They'll let Darnold walk, and they'll find some other veteran that think that they can be usable for that. I don't see him backing away from first round, a top pick like that, right? Washington refused to do it when Shanahan went after Robert Griffin's rookie season and said, hey, we need to move on from trade, and we'll get all these folks back. We've got Kirk Cousins in the house. He's our owner, GM, and everybody were like, are you crazy? They didn't listen to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, do you really think Minnesota is going to go, oh, yeah, let's do that? You know? Because it's not like they got a magical season out of JJ.
Right.
They got a kid who's been, he's been in the offseason, recovering from during the offseason. The only other thing I could see is if they could get on, like, a decent, $35 million one-year deal.
Uh-huh.
And they sit JJ for another year if they feel like he's not ready.
Okay.
They try to squeeze another year out of Sam. I could see that perhaps But long term, it's giving McCarthy and Sam will be playing tomorrow. Listen, I joke, if the Browns can figure out a way to shed stuff on the roster, you know, based on the Cleveland relationship then front office, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the Browns found a way to bring in Sam Darnold. And the irony that he could end up potentially something like the Cleveland region then maybe the first go around.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, there's all these guys over a period of time where I said that they should have taken them. Ironically, I said that about Watson in 2017, not knowing about his dark side. I said that about Goff in 2016, turn your head and cough for Goff. I said that about Darnold. I mean, I'm getting sick of being right about things that they should have done, but they didn't listen to me on, but that's another story for another day. So, you know, again.
I said to you at the time about Goff that, you know, more likely the outcome there is they would have broken that young man.
Sure, sure.
In Cleveland. And we would have never seen what we see today, right?
Well, that's true.
So, and if the Jets and the Panthers and everybody else ruined Sam Darnold.
Yep.
And it took going to San Francisco for a year to fix him, then the Browns certainly would have broken it into.
Chris, that's an amazing point. What would make me, of all people, think that Sam Darnold would have been Cleveland-proof, as great as he's capable of being? That's an excellent point on your part. Touche, my friend. So,
unfortunately for Cleveland fans, who is?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, Baker was for a year, and then he let it go to his head, and, you know, we saw what happened, you know, from there. But ultimately,
which will always be the great regret for Brown fans, because if Baker had been a little more mature.
Yeah.
In my opinion, also Stefanski had more control of that locker room.
Yes.
We would have not seen what we saw. And maybe Mayfield is still in a winning ball game.
Yeah.
That's what it is at this point. But to the Vikings, look, they're a contender, right? They're a contender in the NFC. Can't say they're not. They are. And division, you know, the Bears, as I predicted, would be the last place team. Some out of going to the Super Bowl. They are greatly improved. Clearly, James has played much better than certainly Jason thought. And that is, you know, sitting there at 4-4, they're going to compete right to the end. And that's the bottom of the division sitting at 4-4. So a much improved division in the NFC. So it's really, really what a great job Dan Campbell and the Detroit Lions are doing.
Well, I will say this. I owe it to FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Allen to make this point. When he was on the show after week one, it's become a quasi-tradition for me and him just to kind of take a look at the football landscape after week one and see what we think. He said he thought that the NFC North was going to be the best division in football by far, and it has been. It has been. If you've been following our weekly power rankings for FDH, we also do power rankings by division by adding everything up on there and seeing. And again, it is as strong as the NFC West was many, many, many years ago. If you remember somewhere in the ballpark of about a decade or so ago when the NFC West was as elite as it was, that's kind of the same thing now. And that this midseason breakthrough that we have, again, you can find it on the main page right at the top of the page on fantasydrafthelp.com, our 2024 midseason breakdown. We did a one that was a third of the way through the season a couple weeks back. And one of the things in there, on the statistical columns that we have, margin of victory, 6 weeks into the season, Chris, it was a matter of the top four teams in football in margin of victory were all NFC North teams. Don't know if we've ever seen anything like that before. Don't know if we'll ever see anything like that ever again.
I don't think we will. I mean, that speaks volumes to the explosiveness of their offenses and ability of defenses to dominate. Overstretches.
Yeah, I mean, top to bottom. So again, you know, let's just, before we get to that a little bit more, let's just dismiss the rest of the NFC East here that Washington will be dealing with. Philadelphia, again, in recent weeks, showing signs of pulling their head out of their ass a little bit, but you don't know to what degree that's going to be the case, if they're going to be able to hang in there or not. Dallas, I will say this aggressively, I said so before the season, that, again, this roster is weaker than anybody thinks that it is. There's more holes than anybody thinks that there is. And again, the early season injuries that they've had defensively, that has really hurt. But that's my point, though. If you have a Stars and Scrubs roster and you don't have your stars in there, you're really going to get exposed. And I said that they were going to be hurt by not having really a second wide receiver, nor having a viable running game. You've seen that with Dallas. The Giants are as horrific as everybody thought they were going to be. But basically, Washington at this point just has to fend off Philly in the East, I think, Chris.
No, that's fun. The Giants are as terrible as we thought. You and I were both very critical of Dallas.
Both of us, yes.
And we both saw the roster, as you put very very succinctly described it. We both saw that. And again, I think, you know, to your point, when you have injuries, that kind of roster construction sinks. They don't have any run game, which we question whether they could actually put one together. I picked, of course, Philadelphia in the division, and we'll see. Right? I mean, I think that they are still a team that could win. They've been great here at Miami, but they sit 6-2. They have experience, and I wouldn't be surprised that second half experience is able to. You put together enough to, you know, to push the playoffs and to, you know, challenge Washington. The interesting thing to me relates to the East is the strength of the North. You know, are we looking at a situation where, you know, I mean, is it really just, you know, are we looking at basically the top three teams in the North and then maybe Philadelphia or Washington and that's it? I guess that's what we're going to see.
Yes. I think so.
And so they are truly competing against the Bears or Green Bay in Minnesota to make sure that they can get into the playoffs. Still only a half game behind Washington.
Yes.
But I don't think you can't count out a team with that level of experience. The East is generally, you know, it's bad. It's a better situation than Dallas. You know, as a Dallas and Browns fan, I have spent a lot of energy this NFL season focused on my Ohio Bobcats.
Sure.
and not on pro football. Let's put it that way.
Well, I hear you on that. And as somebody who the last couple of years has been primarily rooting for the Dolphins, now I'm just rooting for them to tank because I know Tua's not going to hold up. I don't want to see the guy become a vegetable, but I'm terrified that it's going to happen. But one way or another, he's not the guy there anymore. Skills-wise, I believe he is, as I've always believed it, but not going to hold up physically. So what does it matter if you're skills-wise, if you can't hold up physically? The NFC North, yes. I mean, just a meat grinder division top to bottom. And one of the things is, again, as teams advance in the playoffs, I always look at this, and this is one of the things that has served me well in making playoff predictions, teams that have glass jaws versus teams that have been through the meat grinder. And these teams, if they don't beat each other up too much, when they get to January and possibly February, it's going to serve them very, very well because the level of competition that they have faced along the way will really be the thing that proves it. I've got Detroit winning the division as I thought at the beginning of the year. Green Bay, a wild card and a strong contender in the NFC, as I thought at the beginning of the year. Minnesota, obviously, I have in that level right now, a team that can still. Green Bay or Minnesota could still win the division, but right now, Detroit, I've actually got them number one in my power rankings right now, and they are number one in the overall metric on our midseason breakdown, as you can see, which is a composite of many, many, many different draft rankings. Minnesota actually ranks second in the league right now, and then there's a drop on this metric to the second tier, which is essentially just comprised of Kansas City, and then a third tier, which goes Green Bay at 4 all the way down to Seattle at 20. So, and looking at this here again, Detroit, Minnesota, Green Bay, three of the teams in the division in the top four in the league in this metric, which combines many, many different statistical categories, as you'll see on here. So Detroit, again, I picked them to make it to the NFC Championship game a year ago. So while I was not the day one Dan Campbell believer that you were, Chris, I have since come around on that. I am a day one Jared Goff believer, so I'll take credit on that one. But Detroit's the team I see coming out of the NFC. But really, if it was any of these three teams, I wouldn't be shocked. That's how great the division is. Chicago's starting to fall off a bit. That loss to Arizona felt like kind of an eliminator game right there. Arizona, I don't think, is a strong wild card contender. I think they're going to have to win the West. But that loss to Arizona is going to hurt Chicago an awful lot in that, because they're going to have enough losses in division by the time it's all said and done against other teams that are going to make the playoffs. So, yeah, this NFC North, if you're just looking at sheer greatness concentrated in one area, the NFC North is the story of the season.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. It's love the NFC North. Atlanta will come out of the South, as I predicted. Yeah. You know, they're a hot, you know, that division is a hot mess. But Atlanta's not a very good team. I mean, how do you lead your division 6-3 and your point differential season 5?
Yeah.
That's of a good team, and they're not.
Right.
All roads lead through Detroit, and I would agree with that. I suspect that really what we are looking at right now is a Kansas City Detroit Super Bowl.
Yep.
You know, that'll be interesting because, you know, we're looking at the Super Bowl that's going to be indoors in the Superdome in New Orleans. You know, does that provide a little advantage to a guy like Jared Goff, who thrives on an indoor, you know, controlled environment like this?
Yep.
You know, I mean, they're not my team, but I would be excited to watch Detroit win a Super Bowl because, you know, historically downtrodden teams can rise up and win it, you know? And so I think that's what we're looking at when we look at midseason. I can't imagine anybody else coming out of the NFC right now. Washington, because of experience, ultimately will fail. And then, you know, they're going to the road clash. And I just think it's, you know, right now it's Detroit and Kansas City. They're the class of both these conferences.
I think so as well. In the NFC West, again, FDH Lounge dignitary Derek Allen will be wincing as I say this, but I think his Arizona Cardinals get aced out by San Francisco in the end. I will say, again, the last 2 years, I have thought that San Francisco's roster has been a little bit thinner than a lot of other folks have. And last year I was proven wrong. This year, again, there's injuries, but as far as the ability to withstand the injuries, maybe I wasn't completely wrong about San Francisco, because they don't look like they rank up there with the top teams in the NFC North and with Washington at this point in time. San Francisco, I see being a team that makes the playoffs, doesn't necessarily go anywhere. I wasn't a believer in Atlanta before the season, but I agree with you. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. They make the playoffs. They don't do anything from there. Detroit, Kansas City, I agree with you on this, and I think it's set up here. The funny thing is, Detroit going to Green Bay last week as we record this live to tape. It was last week's game at Green Bay. Folks are like, oh, inclement weather outside for Detroit's first game outside. What's Jared Goff going to do? Just fine, thank you very much. But that win helped ensure that Detroit won't have to play too many games like that in January, because they are getting the inside track right now on home field. And if you got to go to Ford Field and you got to beat this team there, good luck, I say, to any of these teams here. Could happen, because, again, Green Bay, very good. Minnesota, very good. Washington, very good. Could happen. But you give Detroit the edge there under those circumstances. And like you said, Super Bowl in a dome works out perfectly. That might as well be home field for Detroit in that circumstance. And, again, coming off of the hard knocks with Dan Campbell a year ago, was it? You've got that then. So a team that a lot of people have enjoyed seeing be on the rise in the NFC, a team with a long-suffering fan base, and that's putting it mildly, a team going up against the Taylor Swift-led Kansas City Chiefs. Detroit would be America's team by kickoff in that game, Chris.
Oh, I would 100% agree with you. And, you know, I just... how about the job that, you know, the coaching staff in Arizona has done last year and this year?
Yes.
You know, Gannon and the whole team. I mean, that was us fucking or hiring that, you know, I was like, okay. I didn't really see it, but last year's results and this year leading the division, I got to tell you, man, coach, you know, he's weird and awkward, I think, but, you know, at times, but my man can coach.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if that team, if they can build a roster, if they can build a roster, you know, moving forward, he's really, really that he can coach. I mean, look, you know what pains me on all this stuff, of course, is like, you know, he's another Cleveland native, right?
Yep.
You know, a guy that's a Northeast Ohio native, and you're like, and yet we can't get these guys, you know, to sign up to our local nation. You know, he's a Cleveland kid, so I think it's really proud of the job he's doing on Arizona.
Well, and you look at that, and him being, like you said, a St. Ignatius guy, I'm sure that he was probably dismissed very early on when he got that job by most of the folks in my Texas Hold'em League, because my Texas Hold'em League is dominated by St. Ed's grads, and that's the big rivalry in town here between the parochial schools is Ed's and Ignatius, but the St. Ed's guys are having...
Well, yes, so I got to know something. Ignatius is down. Right now, but
yeah.
When Jimmy came through, Ignatius had the upper hand over us.
Yes, and the St. Ed's guys are having to eat it watching this guy do what he's doing in Arizona. And I'll say this too, again, as we all say, everything ties together in the FDH Lounge. You look at the fact that Arizona and Indianapolis, through the last season and a half, have outperformed the talent on their roster, given the holes that are still there. And it's a little bit easier to understand how Nick Sirianni has just been stepping on rakes for the last year and a half on and off, because those coordinators he lost, hey, turns out they were both pretty good.
Yeah, they were pretty good. In somewhat of Sirianni's defense, right? He hired them.
Yeah.
And you don't lose the coordinator. And, I mean, that affects any coach.
Right.
So, I don't want to totally trash Sirianni. You know, like people go, look, without his coordinators, he's nothing. Well, I'm both hired. He's done things, got their opportunities. But yeah, to your point, I mean, it's certainly made it his job in Philly harder to continue to be as successful as he's at the gate.
Absolutely, yeah. When you lose coaches the caliber of that, is going to affect your operation. But again, Philly looks to be in it here at this point in the postseason, whether it's as division champion or wild card. But again, they don't have the layup that it would be if they were in the AFC. In the AFC, there's teams that make it that are going to be there just, you know, completely because the entire conference basically is shite to a degree that it hasn't been in probably at least 20 years. In the NFC, there is a depth of really good teams that are having to fight through it. And again, the most concentrated, as we said, in the NFC North. So any other points for the first half of the season, Chris, that we didn't get to that we should have?
No, I think we've covered you know, everything. I think the only thing I would also point out in NFC West is that I was not a believer in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. I was too. I thought they'd make the wild card. Yeah.
I have been missing the playoffs, and they just don't look like a team that's ready to make that jump at this point. I think long term they're going to go out and find a quarterback. I think that's going to continue to hold them back. You know, again, I look, you're going to see an NFC Championship game in Detroit. We're going to see an NFC Championship game in Kansas City. You know, are we looking at Buffalo at Kansas City? Look, Buffalo offense, I mean, John Gannon has the ability to go into Kansas City and win that game. So it's not over. The dream of a Lake Erie, Great Lakes, you know, Super Bowl is not dead. Buffalo, Detroit could go. And, what we're seeing right now in the NFL in both conferences is really Roger Dale's, fantasies come true, right? All these teams at or below 500, struggling, nothing but parity across the league. You know, save a couple of teams like Detroit and Kansas City, it's just parity everywhere, everywhere you look. And so the league offices in New York must be very happy today.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think so. You know, despite, again, the collapse of the AFC, there are still enough compelling matchups around the league at this point in time to where they're probably happy with that. Yeah, Seattle, man, I was giving the I told you so's to everybody about Mike McDonald through the first couple of weeks of the season, but they have come back to earth. I mean, not as brutally as New Orleans did, but, they've come back to earth nonetheless.
So, I have not seen the team crash and burn as hard as they have. Since one of Elon's first rocket launches, they, about a team in weeks one and two looked unbeatable, and since then, doesn't look like they understand what the game of football is, but,
yeah.
I mean, wow.
Yeah, and again, that whole thing. I struggle to remember ever when there was anything like that, of like a team through 2 weeks just grabbing you and shaking you by the lapels, we're so much better than you thought we were, and you believe it, and then falling off a cliff after that. This is a rare one in NFL history. So it's been a season with a lot of oddities.
How can you not believe it? How can you not believe it? Those first 2 weeks were so dominant. That team looked like, wow, oh my God, we were so wrong. You and I even had a conversation after the first piece of air about, boy, we wrong about New Orleans or what? My goodness, that is a team. And wait a minute. This next, 7 weeks have occurred.
Yeah. Well, it was... I think we didn't give a lot of people didn't give a lot of weight to it week one because it was against Carolina and they're as bad as we thought they were going to be. But then week two, Dallas, again, it was sort of like nobody really kind of saw it. Again, it was all circumstantial, right? Dallas comes off that beatdown of the Browns week one. Oh, maybe Dallas might have something this year. And then turns out they didn't, but we didn't know it yet. New Orleans was the first team to expose them. Dallas would get subsequently exposed by other teams. So, in retrospect, it was fool's gold, although we couldn't see it when they were 2-0. But, yeah, just the way that they fell off. So, yeah, so every season's got some things that are just real oddities, but that's one of the biggest oddities we've seen in a long, long, long time. At mid-season, being worse than we thought they were going to be. We just thought they'd be mediocre and gray and blah, but like worse than we thought they would be after 2 weeks into the season looking unbeatable. So just the combination of the mirage to what they turned out to be is just such a contrast. But again, always a pleasure breaking it down with you, my man. Looking forward to doing more of this as the season moves along. Thank you so much for being here today, Chris Galloway.
Always a pleasure to be on the podcast with you. We've been doing it so long. It's like second nature.
It is, man. We got a great rhythm doing this stuff. Always appreciate having you in. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode 1777.